This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiswu Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
Amnesty International says civilians are caught in a deadly escalation of violence between the military and separatists seeking an English-speaking state.
That's reporter Moki Edwin Kendaka talking about the latest Amnesty International report on Cameroon's conflict. Details coming up.
Also, the new Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed Ali has invited the warring parties of South Sudan to a face-to-face meeting in Addis Ababa. And the 2026 World Cup soccer tournament will be played in the U.S., Canada, and Mexico.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, the rebels of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition say the Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed Ali has invited Riek Machar for a face-to-face meeting with President Salva Kiir in Addis Ababa on June 20th. SPLM spokesman Mabor Garang confirmed to South Sudan in Focus that SPLM chairman Riek Machar will travel from South Africa to Ethiopia next week to meet with President Kiir. He says the agenda of the meeting is not known, but the two leaders expect to address some of the sticky issues blocking the road to peace in South Sudan.
It's a big step for people of South Sudan, for Dr. Riek Machar, the leader of the main armed opposition, to meet President Salva Kiir face to face. We see it as a step forward because he's been in detention for going on 2 years without charges. And this was really hampering the peace process. And so now we see that there's a major breakthrough if the two principals, who are the leaders of the major warring factions, can meet and come to some kind of a working understanding. Then the rest of the peace process will move on more smoothly. This is finally a very good sign of progress.
In your press release, you are thanking IGAD for facilitating this meeting. But this is the same IGAD that you have been criticizing and saying that they are not neutral. They have been behind the confinement of the leader of your party in South Africa. Why this change of heart?
Because also they are also showing positive signs. So we also reciprocate also with positive signs. And we also have to remember that the IGAD is a diverse body. What we have said is that we salute the courage of the IGAD, because it was very courageous of them to make such a decision with such a divided opinions. I mean, we have said before that the formula for negotiations is flawed, because President Salva Kiir and his political military allies, some of them are party to the conflict and mediators at the same time, and senior mediators at that, who can bulldoze processes. So we have to be careful when we say IGAD, because even us, we are part of IGAD.
From your press release, you mentioned that President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar will meet on the 20th of June in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. This is at the invitation of the Ethiopian Prime Minister. What is the topic for this meeting? What are the issues that these two leaders are going to discuss?
I am not privy to that information, and it is within the letter. The agenda will be within the letter. But like I said, we are trying to move with these small steps. And so this invitation is the first step, and we will await further communication from IGAD regarding the agenda and these kind of things. As you know, our chairman has been detained, and he was incommunicado also for a few days, which caused some alarm. But Our communication sometimes are limited.
The SPLM-IO has been using the word detained. You have used it several times in this interview that your chairman has been detained in South Africa. Who detained him?
Well, if you go back to the communiques of the IGAD, the Assembly of Heads of State and Government, and the Council of Ministers, and some other press releases of IGAD, the IGAD has now has acknowledged that they are the ones who detained our chairman. We are yet to hear what were the charges and all this, but this is not what is important for us at the moment. What is important for us at the moment is how are we going to find peace, because
if President Kiir and your leader Riek Machar agree on the way forward, and if the South Sudan opposition alliance are not in agreement with you, it's still that's an obstacle. Why is it difficult for SPLM-IO to merge with the South Sudan opposition alliance? What are your issues with this alliance?
Some of the opposition groups in the South Sudan opposition alliance still have members in Juba. It's a contradiction to be South Sudan opposition alliance, and then some of the members of South Sudan opposition alliance are in the parliament in Juba, are ministers in Juba. There are other South Sudan opposition alliance leaders whose position is that Dr. Riek Machar and President Salva Kiir should both go. But for them to be able to have a voice to say that Dr. Riek Machar should go, it is the pressure of the armed struggle waged by the SPLM in opposition that pressures the government and brings them to the negotiating table. And so the position of some leaders in the South Sudan opposition alliance is closer to the government than to other people in the opposition. But there are other leaders in South Sudan opposition alliance that we are still talking to. The process of unity will take confidence building. It is not just a matter of uniting for the sake of uniting. It is uniting based on shared objectives.
That's Mabior Garang, spokesman of the SPLM-IO. He was speaking to my colleague John Tanza from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, earlier today.
A new report by the international human rights group Amnesty International criticizes both the Cameroon military and separatists fighting the independence of the English-speaking region for using unnecessary and excessive force. The rights group says civilians are frequently caught up in the violence. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from the English-speaking northwestern town of Jikwa, which has been completely deserted due to the fighting.
It is a very quiet Wednesday morning here at the English-speaking northwestern town of Jikwa. Hundreds of men and women usually assemble at the town's daily market, but now there are only about half a dozen men. 43-year-old trader Claude Oyebok says everyone fled when armed separatists attacked their town and killed a policeman, and the military reacted with extreme force.
As I'm talking to you, I don't know where my mother is, my brother or my sister.
After the attack, armed separatists claimed on social media they had occupied Njikwa. Shu Canisius Numfo, Cameroon's highest government official in the area, says the fighting scared the population and thousands escaped to the bushes for their lives.
We are struggling to get in connection with the phones of the 9 villages so that they should talk to their people, that they should have confidence in the forces of law and order who are here to guarantee their security. The government is in place, the forces of law and order, they are there to continue with our routine activities.
Njikwa is just one locality in which Amnesty International says civilians are caught in a deadly escalation of violence between the military and separatists seeking an English-speaking state. Amnesty says Cameroon's military has responded with arbitrary arrests, torture, unlawful killings, and destruction of property. It says in one striking incident, satellite images and other photographic evidence it obtained show the complete destruction of the village of Kwakwa, which was burned to the ground by Cameroonian security forces following an operation conducted in December 2017 in connection with the killing of 2 police officers by suspected armed separatists. Military spokesperson Kennedy Bajek has described as unfounded allegations that the country's soldiers are using excessive force on the population and separatist fighters who, for the most part, are using locally made guns.
On a l'impression qu'ils partent de ce qui est dit dans les médias sociaux.
He says Amnesty should stop basing its findings on what is published on social media and go down to the affected villages and bushes. He says the reports persist in demonizing the Cameroon Defense Forces and that Amnesty should note that the state of Cameroon, as any other state in the world, has the right of legitimate defense. He says in spite of the derogatory report, the military will remain professional as they have been. Unrest began in Cameroon in November 2016 when English-speaking teachers and lawyers in the North, West and South West began calling for reforms and greater autonomy. They marched on the streets, criticizing what they called the marginalization of English speakers by French speakers. The government responded with a crackdown and massive arrest and detention of suspects and a three-month internet shutdown. Separatist groups joined together and started calling for the independence of the English-speaking from the French-speaking regions. The government said the fighters torched schools and killed at least 44 police and military personnel. The separatist leader, Ayuk Tabe Julius, was arrested along with dozens of his collaborators in Nigeria and extradited to Cameroon. They have not been seen in public since January, and their followers have used social media and vowed to paralyze the country until Ayuk Tabe and 47 others are released. More than 70 villages have been torched, and the United Nations reports that hundreds of thousands have fled for their lives to the bushes and towns in the French-speaking regions. At least 20,000 have crossed over to Nigeria. 200 have died, and hundreds are missing. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Njikwa, Northwestern Cameroon.
A Saudi-led coalition began pounding Yemen's port city of Hodeidah today after a deadline passed for Iranian-backed Houthi rebels to leave the area. Aid agencies voiced concern for Hodeidah's 600,000 residents, along with the rest of the country's population, because about 70% of Yemen's food, oil, and humanitarian aid passes through the port. The UN says the assault will hamper efforts to reach a political settlement, saying there is no military solution. The UN already has called Yemen one of the worst humanitarian disasters in modern times. The country is on the brink of famine, with an estimated 8 million people at risk of starvation. The sounds of explosives and heavy gunfire echoed across the city with an airstrike every minute. Saudi ships also are pounding the rebels and ground troops from the United Arab Emirates, and Yemen's exiled government are trying to cut off Houthi supplies. Julian Veldwick with the aid group Care International told the Associated Press, "We thought it could not get any worse, but unfortunately, we were wrong."
Zimbabwe joins the rest of the world in commemorating International Albinism Awareness Day as a time to build a deeper understanding of the challenges people with albinism face. Reporter Kudzai Zanawash reports from Harare.
Pelile Machingamidze is the Vice National Chairperson of Zimbabwe Albino Association. Wednesday, she shared some of the issues she and others with disorder confront.
Yeah, there are so many challenges we face as albinos. The major one is about the medical condition of our skin. The biggest issue is many of the albinos, they are from less privileged ones.
She adds that in Africa, fathers are often absent in the life of children with albinism.
Moreover, as an albino, at the moment we will be born, mainly the father who ran away. We are mainly raised by single parents. We are looked after by mothers who will be struggling to make ends meet.
Machingamidze says impoverished mothers often can't provide the ointments that people with albinism need to protect their skin from the sun. Albinism is a genetic disorder that results in a lack of pigmentation in the skin, hair, and eyes. Those with the disorder typically suffer from vision problems, and their skin is very sensitive to sun exposure, resulting in high rates of skin cancer. The Zimbabwe Albino Association is trying to educate families and community leaders about the needs of children with the disorder. The association has partnered with Young Achievers Sports Development, a local organization that coordinates the Homeless World Cup team. The two organizations have set aside positions for albino players at the Homeless World Cup in Mexico later this year. Petros Chatiza is with the Young Achievers Sports Development.
We also felt that people with albinism are also excluded in the mainstream society. So by having them taking part and participating with other young people, we also bring spotlight to issues of albinism.
In Zimbabwe, discrimination against people with albinism is more subtle than in some nations, but it exists, Machingamidze says. Often, they are excluded from being fully part of their communities. She says, which is why it is almost impossible to find any albino occupying leadership positions in government or organizations. However, she says in Zimbabwe, people aren't at risk of being abducted and murdered for their body parts, as happens in some countries. Some traditional healers say an albino's body has healing properties and there is an international trade in body parts. In Malawi this year, a police officer, a medical officer, and a priest are among those arrested in connection with the murder of a young albino man. Malawi officials report there have been at least 22 albinos abducted and murdered in the past 4 years. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zunawashe from Harare.
An Italian Coast Guard ship today brought more than 900 rescued migrants to shore in Sicily, even as a diplomatic dispute escalates over Italy's refusal to let another rescue ship dock. The migrants on the Italian ship are mainly from Eritrea, Sudan, Mali, Ivory Coast, and Guinea. They included scores of children and several pregnant women. Also aboard were the bodies of two people who died during their crossing. A few days ago, Italian officials refused to allow the Aquarius rescue ship to land with more than 600 migrants, saying Italy has taken more than its fair share and other nations need to take more. Spain offered to allow the Aquarius to dock at the port of Valencia. Rome's refusal to take the Aquarius raised pressure on the EU to do more to address the flow of migrants across the Mediterranean. Italy today demanded that France apologize for comments President Emmanuel Macron made about Italy's position.
The death of Morgan Tsvangirai in February created a leadership vacuum for Zimbabwe's Movement for Democratic Change, which he founded. The opposition party's governing council endorsed one of its vice presidents, Nelson Chamisa, to lead the party. But former vice president Thokozani Kupi disputes that decision and is vying for both the national presidency and the party leadership. Reporter Adi Kondo has more on the story from Bulawayo.
Zimbabwe's nomination court on Thursday issues the list of candidates for the July 30th national election. But even before the MDC list is out, factions are arguing over which one can use the party name and symbols. The fight over the name and symbols has gone to the courts, but any decision may split the party further. Political analyst Butler Tembo says that could unsettle opposition voters with less than 2 months before the national election.
Party supporters might have a problem identifying which party to vote for, because the symbols almost look very much alike, with one having the palm and Nelson Chamisa's face in it, and the one for Thokozani Kupi also having a child as part of that palm. That is likely to cause serious confusion, which might actually lead to the splitting votes, especially as this election is coming in, where we've got more than 130 political parties contesting in this particular election. This might actually lead to a reduction of votes, especially for the presidential candidate Nelson Chamisa, from the way I see it.
Melissa Ngubo is among the frustrated voters.
These people are simply wasting our time. Our hopes were on the MDC party, but now they're busy playing their stupid games, and this will not take them anyway. We want serious things here, and we hoped that that would be the party which was going to bring down or defeat ZANU-PF.
Alfred Zirutwe is the national spokesperson for the MDCT National Youth Assembly and a Coupe supporter. Zirutwe thinks the party symbol and name won't bother voters.
It's not going to be a problem. I don't think they'll be confused. They know whom they want to vote for and they know what they want. So the voters will vote accordingly.
However, some political analysts and opposition supporters worry that there could be considerable confusion in the rural areas where it is hard to get the word out. Analyst Thomas Tolle notes one issue is over the names. The Coupe faction retained the long-used MDCT name, while the Chamisa group uses the newer MDC Alliance label.
Well, the confusion will actually have a negative effect on the, especially the MDC Alliance, especially looking at the rural electorate. Thokozani Coupe is definitely going to profit a lot from this because she'll be running under MDCT and she's going to harvest a lot of votes from loyalists of MDCT supporters who feel obliged to support their party till the end.
MDC Alliance party spokesperson Tabitha Kumalo declined to comment. Both MDC factions have a serious task ahead as they reach out to voters. With serious campaigning set to begin after the nomination court issues candidate lists, they could run out of time. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo.
The 2026 World Cup soccer tournament will be played in the United States, Canada, and Mexico. The U.S.-Mexico-Canada bid got 134 votes to 65 for Morocco. FIFA members voted today in Moscow, a day before this year's World Cup play starts in Russia. Their joint bid offered FIFA an $11 billion profit and hopes for an expansion of the U.S. football market, compared with $5 billion that runner-up Morocco offered. In addition, facilities are largely in place for the combined bid, while Morocco would have to build most of the venues, renovate the rest, and construct new hotels and other infrastructure. That's a major consideration that considering the challenges that Qatar is still dealing with for the 2022 tournament.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyes Wuhibe in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Wagner Roberts, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Ethiopian lawmakers have lifted the controversial state of emergency imposed across the country 3 months ago. We'll examine the most significant reform so far by the country's new Prime Minister, Abiy Ahmed, on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you on board. This is Upfront on the Voice of America.
Listen, we need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now, this is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
It's Upfront, Wednesdays at 17:30 UTC,
right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa music fans. We have hours of the music that you love every day.
Some things change, some remain the same.
From the north to the south and the east to the west, we play only the best. Tune in at 0100, 0200, 1200 and 1300 UTC, GMT, right here on VOA Africa.
Sporty greetings to all our VOA listeners. This is Sonny Young, host of the Sunny Side of Sports.
We will rock you.
Please join me at 1630 and 1830 UTC, Monday through Friday, for special World Cup updates during the month-long football festival in Russia. Right here on The Voice of America.